It's Friday, July 25th, 1997, and this is an evening talk about the realm of the nature spirits with Lillian Van Voorhis. Should want a copy. Jenny can tell you about that. She'll be getting a copy herself, and we'll work out something about either I'll mail them to you or Jenny will get them to you or something like that. And it's $5 for a copy of the talk. Tonight, what I'm going to share with you is really close to my heart, and it's been part of my life since I was a kid, a very young child. I grew up on a ranch, and I was very isolated. I had only my brothers and my sister to play with. And so most of my time when everything was done, we did have a lot of work to do and stuff, but when the work was done, you could roam the acreage, you know, and do whatever and be whatever and hear and see whatever. And I think a lot of my connection to nature I did develop from my father. He was a farmer, but he loves animals, and he always could show me where the nests were hidden, whether it was in the fields or in the trees or whatever. I learned a lot about nature and how to be around nature so that they wouldn't be frightened of me from my father, just in his gentle way. But beyond that, what I began to realize early on was that I could see and hear a lot of things, and when I would ask Dad about them, the feedback I got was usually, oh, you just imagine that. Oh, that was just a dog barking, or that was the cat rustling, or something like that. So as far as I know, my father has never seen fairies or any of the other tree spirits or anything like that, as far as I know. I keep trying to have little conversations about that, but it's becoming more and more difficult. And either he has had the experience and doesn't want to talk about it, or he's just really not open to talking about it. But anyway, from childhood, I really have a connection that stems from not only my time spent outside, but also my time at night. I think I'm probably the only kid I ever knew who liked to go to bed at night. And the reason for that was that when I went to bed, I knew that waiting for me would be all these wonderful little beings that would come out and play, make me relax. I can see now that that's what the purpose was. And also keeping my mind and my spirit open to the other dimensions so I wouldn't forget. And I had a wonderful connection with one of my brothers, David, who is 4 years younger than I. He also saw these things, although he tells me now that he does not remember. And he's in his middle 40s, I think now, or late 40s. And we had a situation where we would have so much fun with what was happening. We all slept in the same bedroom because it was a little old farmhouse that I grew up in. We had so much fun with what was happening on the covers that we decided to create our own kingdom, or our own land. We named it, and I can't recall the name, but one of these days I'm going to sit in meditation and see if that doesn't come back. And we would go to sleep at night knowing that we were going there, and we would meet each other there, and we would have wonderful things happen. And all of the little beings that were on the bed would be there along with lots, lots more. And this was always a joyous place to go to. A place of light and laughter. You're going to sip my water, huh? And nothing bad ever happened. It was only full of joy. It was the absolute perfect thing for children. My mother really did not like hearing about this land that we went to at night. In fact, she really hated it. And after a while, we learned that we didn't talk to Mom about this at all, but we went into the fields and talked to each other after the work was done or whatever. You know, we would go talk about what happened and plan what was going to happen tonight when we went to sleep. So I didn't understand at that time that that was unusual. It was perfect for my brother and I. But when I tried to talk about it to other children, they didn't understand what I was talking about. And certainly adults didn't. When I grew from youth into my teenage years, I made a promise to myself that I would never forget, because probably by the time I was in sixth grade, it was beginning to diminish. It was not happening so much because I was getting ready for junior high and all that, and you know, your mind is changing. And I just made a promise that I would always remember, and I would tell other children if I ever got the chance. I never dreamed that I'd ever be talking in public about fairies and elves and tree spirits and things like that. But when I was in my 20s, I had a series of teachings at night where a group of white, seemingly teachers, or if you want to call them masters, whatever, they came on a nightly basis for a long period of time, and one of the things they prepared me for was pulling up from memory all the experiences I had as a child, because I would be telling other people. They told me very plainly, you will talk about fairies, and you will help people remember and believe. And I think a belief in that kingdom is one of the first things you have to have. It is a parallel life stream. They are a brother race. There are as many different kinds of them as there are of people, if not more. And there are four major divisions in this kingdom. We have, and they correspond with the elements, earth, water, air, and fire, and many levels in each of those four major divisions. So the other thing that's required to make that connection is an open and loving, compassionate heart. And I like the way the Buddhists talk about having your true heart or your great heart open, the place wherein resides all that compassion, all the wisdom, all the love, all the knowledge, the complete expansiveness. There is no limitation. And that's what you have to have in order to become able to work with or see and hear the fairies. In particular, I was telling Ginny before I came, I have a folder that's about like this at home with information on this subject, and I've tried to distill it down because I want to leave some time for questions or sharing. I'm sure some of you have had experiences. Do all of you believe in the fairy kingdom? Do you all have that understanding that that's real? Or Well, we're in the perfect place tonight. Just a few fairies here. One thing I want to say, too, is that in a place like this where they know that I'm here, they know that Ginny interacts with them, the room is full of them, I can assure you. Behind everything, on top of things, probably, you know, hanging from the lamps, if you look carefully, you'll see little movements. If you feel things, like little pricklings or brushings around your ankles or on your hands or in your hair, sometimes it'll feel like there's little feet walking. I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me, and there's never a bug. It's always there's somebody up there, you know, taking a ride or whatever. So if you feel anything like that tonight, that's a natural response to these little beings who see that there are a group of humans who also are curious about them, just as they are about us. They're becoming more and more curious now because more of us are interacting with them in a way that is loving, supportive, and not frightening or nasty, you know. One thing I might say about fairies, this is true pretty much for angels as well. They don't care what you look like, what you're wearing, or what you're doing, anything like that. They look right to your heart. They look at your field rather than the physical, or, you know, what kind of a hat you have on. All of that is secondary. They look straight at your heart to see how open it is, how much light is in your field. Is the field full of fear and contracted, or is it soft and expanded, that kind of thing? They want to know if they can trust you. And when they find they can trust you, you will begin to have things happen. And when I shut all of this down when I was in my late teens and early 20s, and they tried for quite a number of years to get my attention, and I finally kind of got hit over the head a few times, I had some real phenomena happen. Not the least of which is an event that happened when we lived in Shell Beach and my son was probably 15 months old. I have two children and Scott was very little at the time. So I had put him down for a nap and I had washed some clothes, baby clothes, took the laundry out. I had this little tiny long yard on the side of the house that we lived in Shell Beach, hung all the baby clothes. There was a line, a triple clothesline, you know, right outside my kitchen door. Walked out the stoop, hung up the baby clothes from the front of the line to about the middle, went back in and read or something. Later on, before Scott was awake, I went in to kind of check on him, and I could see through the window, which was at the end of the house where my kitchen was on this end. All the clothes were at this end of the line, and I thought, what the heck? I went out the kitchen. Everything that I had hung from the front end of the line to the middle was now in the reverse. It was at the rear end of the line to the middle. They had somehow moved everything en masse. That was such a shock to me. I could not believe my eyes, and I thought I was really losing it. You know, this time I'm really going crazy or whatever. But as I went out and unpinned them, I thought to myself, now just think about this, Lil. It is not logical that you'd walk out the door and go all the way to the end of the line and pin up, starting at that end and end in the middle. You just logically, you would not do that. So my husband, of course, didn't believe a word I said. But I started to keep a record of these different events that happened. I would have jewelry, like earrings. They love earrings. If you have old jewelry, one of the best gifts you can give if you have a garden, is to take an old earring and just bury it or put it under a rock and, you know, give it as a little gift. They love things like that. Earrings would disappear. I'd find them under the bed when I never take my earrings off and leave them beside the bed because I'm always afraid I'll knock them off and lose them, you know. I had a fire opal, beautiful necklace my husband had bought me, banished from my jewelry box until we moved to where I live now, which is Clovis. And it reappeared in a drawer in my dresser. And I can tell you, I searched that dresser many, many times looking for that necklace because it had matching earrings and I still had the earrings and, you know, never found the necklace. There it was after all these years. And it had been gone probably about 8 to 10 years, a long time. So they do things like that to get your attention, that they're active in your home. Every home has its own little house spirits. Call them whatever you like, house fairies or house spirits. And they work to keep the energy of a home on an even keel. They will clear anything that's stagnant or if you had an argument, they work along with someone like a cat who is wonderfully emotionally developed and takes a lot of it through their bodies to help clear the area and heal their humans. They will work with animals. In fact, they love cats and dogs. If you can see, you will see that they'll be playing with the cat. If you have a cat or a dog who looks up in the room or around, it's a very good indication that you have probably some, either an angel nearby, someone out of body, or nature spirit, something like that. And they're very active. I've had them come when I'm cooking. They love parties and any kind of dress up. They love cooking. And when you're rearranging, Jenny's house is always so active. When I come here, like tonight, it was a little bit different than it was the last time that I was here 2 months ago. And I think that she's got it. We'll talk about salamanders a little later on, but I think that she is a person who has a fire spirit working with her. They love humans who have active, fluid, creative minds. And she does, as all of you who know her can attest, I'm sure. So anyway, they're very active in our homes. And all you have to do is just say, yes, I know that you're here. Give me a sign. And you may begin to have some things happen. If you get still, like you're sitting and reading, what? Go ahead, Janice. yeah, well, I'll tell you something else. This just happened to me a month ago. I was sitting at my Ginny's dining table. I have a window, and I was sitting at my little kitchen table reading, studying for something. And I received a message. We want you to read something from a particular book that I had. I think it's Carolyn Mace's book that she wrote. So I went, oh, okay, well, I can do that. I put my papers down at a placemat and, you know, my juice or whatever. Got up, went to find this book. It was not in my healing room where I thought it was. So then I went to my bedroom thinking I'd take it in there to read. It wasn't there. I looked in a lot of places. It was not there. So I finally gave it up and said, I surrender. If I'm supposed to read this, you're going to have to show me where the book is. I walked back in the kitchen. There was the exact book I was looking for sitting on top of the paperwork that I had laid down on the placemat. And I heard a lot of laughter. It was like, oh, that was a big joke. You know. So they do have a great sense of humor, especially if you do. They like to make you laugh, and they love to hear people laugh. Before I go into the specific families, I do want to say that eons ago, they were known to us as the good people in Europe, in England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales. That area in particular, even though the contact is much less probably everywhere across the planet, that it was extremely active in that particular area. And one of the reasons that the whole nature kingdom withdrew was because man abused his power. Humanity abused its power and fell into judgment and fear concerning these very wonderful beings. Before that, they worked in harmony with us and we with them. And they helped us grow crops. They helped us find lost animals. They helped with healing, especially of sick children. Many of the nature beings adore children and will do whatever they can to assist. But with the advent of Christianity, and I'm sorry to say since my background in faith is the Catholic Church, in particular began to label all of these activities along with the goddess teachings and many of the nature teachings that were out there at the time as being evil or of the dark side or whatever. And so humanity began to blame nature spirits for everything that happened wrong to us or for sick children or a sudden death or whatever it was. And they began to withdraw from us, knowing that we could not be trusted any longer. So that's a very sad part of our history. But I think as we move towards the new century, a great resurgence in the nature teachings, particularly Native American in this country, but all nature teachings across the board is going to resurface. So I'm very excited about that. Let's see. Got a couple of other notes here. Oh, I've got a story that I want to share. One of the kinds of beings that loves to be around children is a type of dwarf, and I always call them brownies, and I think they're very common in England. They love children, but they like dark places. Oh, you're not bothering me at all. That's certainly okay. No problem. So the business about children saying to their parents, there's something in the closet, there's something under the bed, there's something behind my chair, whatever it is, something made my toys move, all of that is related to these little beings that usually attach themselves to a family, and they will stay until the family breaks up or the children leave. Sometimes that particular being even stays when the children have left home. They'll have a favorite spot, and they like to see how their young people have grown up, so they'll check in when they touch in with the parents or whatever. Ted Anders, in one of his books, tells a wonderful story about a young man whose job it was to go down to the cellar, down some wooden stairs, to collect the laundry. And he was always afraid to do this, and he would tell his mother, there's someone down there, there's someone that's going to get me, and of course she never believed him. So he would go down these stairs, and at one point there were two stairs that were kind of separated and rickety, and he knew that's where this person or this being was. And he'd jump over the stairs or whatever and run down and get the laundry, and sometimes as he was coming back up the stairs, he would see these two little eyes peering up at him, you know, yellow eyes or golden eyes, and would scare the heck out of him. And sadly, if he had had a conscious parent who could have told him what that was, that being would have begun to let itself be seen, because the child could see the eyes and could certainly feel its energy, which unfortunately was misinterpreted. But they have a very strong energy, and they hide in closets, in attics, under beds, under stairwells, in basements, behind the washing machine, any big appliance. They like to kind of hide behind things in the kitchen and peek out. So any of you who are around young children, if they ever tell you a story like this, please listen to them. My daughter used to tell me that there was a little man in her closet, and I never saw the being per se, but I could feel something. So she is one that always had to have the closet door closed, but the bedroom door had to be open just so far, you know. Our son had to have a light on because the little man in his room always waited till he was right in bed and then would pop up at the end of the bed and, you know, startle him, or it would come up and sit on the bed covers. So he had to have his light on for a number of years, until 5 or 6. So anyway, things like this are very common, they're very natural, they're very normal. You're going to hear a lot more of it. I have one woman friend right now who has a child that is in the 3rd grade. He has a lot of past life recall. He can see nature spirits without any problem. He tells about things before they happen. It's quite remarkable. He's a very unusual and wonderful child. The school, of course, is trying to test him and categorize him, and not having much luck with that. But anyway, that's coming in a big way very, very soon. Let me talk a little bit about how to make contact with nature spirits. I already talked about how it's really good to be in kind of a loving space and having an open heart. The best way, of course, is out of doors, in your yard or in your garden. If you have even just a blade, a little patch of grass, you have nature spirits. Everything is alive and vital and ensouled with life force. If you have trees, you can get in touch with tree spirits, or just wonderful beings. The only thing that they really don't like about humans are if we've drunk to excess, if we use drugs, if we smoke tobacco to excess, or if we're full of lustful, angry, or otherwise kind of negative thoughts or thought forms in our field. They will not, you know, come out and let you see them or work with them if you're carrying a lot of that stuff around. they're still pretty shy, but one thing that really draws them is laughter or music or a playful spirit. So, for instance, when I have a full moon drumming circle or a meditation under the moonlight in the backyard, everybody begins to feel all these little tuggings and twitchings and scratchings and touchings. And I always tell them ahead of time when I'm going to do something like that, and they love to be there. They love music and dance parties. If you simply love life in general, that's a great bridge to reaching nature spirits. They will see that in your field. If you love all types of humans, all types of plants and animals and minerals, you're a natural. You won't have any problem at all. If you go to a wild area, the wild fairies are really extremely, extremely shy. But if you sit still or you just come in with an honorable way of moving through their home instead of crashing about or leaving trash or whatever, you'll feel them if you don't see them peeping out at you. That's one of the reasons why when people are out at night in the woods or in an area somewhere, a clearing or whatever, you get this feeling that something's watching you. Well, something is watching you. It's the nature spirits. And they just want to know what you're doing out there in their home and what are you about? Are you good, or are you going to harm something? That kind of thing.
You make an offering too.
Yes. Yes.
For making sure.
Wasn't there a story that I asked you to be sure to share, Jenny?
Oh,
Do
my
you re-
camping story? My nature
story? Okay, let's do that a little bit later when I'm talking about all the earth spirits particularly. That's probably enough on that. There's nothing really specific there. They really are willing to work with and love to know that there are humans who know about them. What do they look like? They look like anything and everything. They come in all sizes, from very, very tiny to the salamanders, the great fire beings, of course, have an enormous body coming out of a volcano like Kilauea or Montserrat, I guess it's erupting in the Caribbean. The ones that I see, I do not see stylized, beautiful bodies like you see in drawings or the little fairies that you can buy or things like that. I see, first of all, their light form. So, for instance, a flower fairy can be very, very tiny. Every flower has one in the heart, in its throat, and they can be very, very small. But sometimes when I'm sitting outside or when I've been to other people's homes and we've barbecued and you sit out in the evening, I will begin to see them come out and look at the people peering out from the bushes. And I've seen them up about 2 feet. And first I'll see their light form, which is usually in the evenings, it seems to be blue and violet are the two colors that I see most commonly. And after that, if they get brave and they come close, sometimes they'll come and stand right by your chair. You can begin to see their features. But what I think they do is create features that are what they see you'd like to see in your field. They're wonderful mimics and they're wonderful creators of form. So sometimes they will make themselves look the way you think they ought to look. And they don't always get it right. So you might have really long, gangly arms and short little legs or big, long ears or eyes that are huge and the rest of the face is real pinched and tiny. They're very funny about things like that. Sometimes a whole bunch of them will show up, especially in my kitchen, and they'll all have about the same look, and they have to hold it. They are learning to develop their mental bodies. They're very emotionally developed. So to hold that mental form for any length of time is difficult, and you'll see them start to fade or the costume begin to disappear or whatever. It's great fun. Anyway, I'd say go with no expectations, and then whatever you see is appropriate. The way they are created, it is said in legend and some of the myths or the old teachings that it's the angels that have created a lot of the nature spirits. And indeed, there is an angel that presides over every area, like Ginny's yard and my garden at home, has an angel that presides over that particular garden, over a park, over a wild area, whatever it is. And the nature spirits are very devoted to their angel and do the work that's appropriate for their trees and plants. Oh, I have a little note here about a story. I had a blue jay. I saw one at Janice's tonight when I arrived, but there's a baby at my house, and he'll sit up on the hip of my roof, and his parents know and trust me, so they might be down here while I'm sitting in a lawn chair. And you could hear them singing, and I can tell you, jays can sing. It's wonderful. I never knew they could do this until this baby happened. Anyway, they'll be twittering and singing to this little baby and trying to get it to fly down and trust me, but it wouldn't do that. And all of a sudden, I saw it make a leap and come down, and on its back was a lovely little fairy. I just know, encouraging the bird to trust, that it was safe. So the nature spirits in your garden or in parks, national parks, whatever, have their animals and their creatures that they're very devoted to and that they love, protect, and guide. They show them where I put the seed. Of course, birds can find that very rapidly themselves, but you will see mockingbirds in my yard in particular are rather shy. You'll see them trying to guide them over to where the other birds are getting everything, that kind of thing. As far as what nature spirits do, they have the power to bring earth energy and the energy from the sun and blend them in the right degree for the proper growth and nurturement of any plant or flower, any bush, the blades of grass in your yard, your lawn, whatever. Sometimes they will run that through their body to give it a particular twist. They work all day or most of their day, kind of. If you can see, you will see them moving about their particular flower or bush. And then they take a break and they might just loll about or have a party or relax or whatever, see what the humans are doing that are nearby. And then at night, there's a kind of a restful time. There's a withdrawing of the active forces until the next day. So they're very, very active. Sometimes I think they even have names for the creatures that are in the yard. And occasionally I get a hint of that. I've never actually heard that per se, but I'll get a feeling for it. Well, to talk about the earth spirits, the ones that are aligned with the earth energy in particular, there are several divisions here. And the first are the elementals. They are the ones that really work with the life force that creates the minerals, the rocks, the soil, the water, purity of the air, the quality of the air. And I really want to say that you can request help if you're having trouble with your water. You can ask them, the elementals that create the water itself, to remove the chlorine or to take some of it out to give it more purity. You can ask if it's a bad air day. You can ask that in your particular area, would they please clear the air somewhat? You can really work with these. I've tried that, and so far, I try to ask if maybe the water could just come up, from the ground, the table, and kind of move around. I haven't had a lot of success with that one, but good idea, Ginny. Yeah, so do I. So the elementals are not what we would think of as intelligence on our way of thinking of that, but the work they do is very wonderful and very much needed. The next ones, of course, are the nature spirits that are on the surface of the planet, and these include everything from the little flower fairies to the tree spirits, the elves, the gnomes, the dwarves, just many, many different varieties. And they all have their specific work, and you'll have different ones in different countries. They do vary from country to country, and in this country, sometimes from state to state. I haven't done a lot of traveling recently, but I remember years ago, the little beings look somewhat different, for instance, near the Grand Canyon or on the East Coast than they do out here. So that's kind of an interesting thing. The elves and dwarves, I think, are two of the most ancient of the earth spirits, and they are really, really devoted to their rocks, or the elves in particular, to the deep places in the forest where they reside. Dwarves keep the great treasures of the earth, the deposits of great minerals and gemstones, gold, silver, the emeralds, rubies, all of those kinds of things. I've often thought if people who were mining were doing their work in a very conscious way, even for coal, there is a very particular kind of being that works with the mining of coal and tin and things like that. You could actually ask if it's in divine order. I could use a little bit of gold, I don't want it all, but just, and they probably would guide you and show you where, people who pan for gold, things like that. Once they knew that you were trustworthy and you weren't just there to be greedy or whatever. I have a sense that in South America there's a great treasury of some sort that has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and I can feel that that is very much watched over and cared for by some of the very ancient dwarves. And I think only the right people are going to be allowed to find that. I don't know what it relates to, but anyway. There's a rock up in Shaver Lake that I take a group to do a woman's kind of retreat every fall. And it's like a great batholith. It's a great expanse of rock. And when the woman that I met first showed me this, long before we got there, you could feel the sacredness of the energy that's around this rock. And then when you approach it, it's like entering a temple atmosphere. So we've done some wonderful meditations out there, and the women who've come have had many different experiences of not only the rock spirit itself that holds the intelligence of that rock's body, but the dwarves and other beings who have apparently done ceremony on that rock in the past, native peoples. So it's a rather wonderful spot. Rocks have an intelligence that can be felt, and their dwarves are devoted to them. They love them, and they're usually as old as the rock being that they are living under or nearby. So they really dislike it when people come in, you know, and light a fire without asking permission, or leave trash, or recently, sadly, at this particular site, the land was bought and they're going to develop and build homes. So the first thing they did was they plunked a picnic table on the face of this rock. And we were quite upset about that. It is a nice granite-looking picnic table and everything, but we just felt that was not needed, and I just wonder how the dwarves felt about that. They are master craftsmen. They can teach us about how to build things, especially any kind of working with metals of any sort or gems. Anyone who is interested in jewelry making probably has a being of that sort that's coming to work with them. The other thing that I like about these creatures and the gnomes and elves as well, but dwarfs in particular, they love the insect people. They love beetles. They love the ant people. They love all the little beings that reside in the earth with them. And they help them. Like if you have somebody that's spraying their yard all the time, there's usually a being that will help guide them to a safe spot, that kind of thing. So they're very devoted to the insects and the little bug-like creatures, especially beetles and things like that. Sometimes I'll not see it specifically, but I'll get an image in my mind that if I go to a certain place, there's a bunch of beetles there, and that this little being has guided them there, and they're safe. They also work with the spider people, who are much maligned. In my own life, we have a lot of black widows where I live, and the first thing that everybody said, oh, you have to get a spray, you have to get people to come in on a monthly basis. And 2 years ago, when we had quite an infestation, I sat down and really spoke to the Deva of black widows. There is like an overlighting being, an overlighting energy that guides that particular life force. And I told her that she could have one spot out by the block stone fence that the church behind us put up. It was all wild there, and there's nothing there but leaves and stuff, and they could take that area. Well, that's exactly what happened. We had a number of them out there, but we didn't have any in the garage or around the house. That was 2 years ago, and I sort of re-upped the energy around that last year, and this year I forgot, and we have them everywhere. So it's been a busy summer, and I haven't taken the time to tune in, but I'm here to tell you that you can communicate with beings like that, and there are nature spirits who will work with you and help in that regard. When we lived here in Atascadero, we had a mole who came up in my flower, my iris beds, which that's my favorite flower. They were just lifting them up and dumping them everywhere. And I sat down and talked to the mole and asked it if it would please go out to my mailbox, which was just, you know, my little orchard out there. Within 24 hours, the mole had moved out there, no problem. And it stayed for a long time, kind of dug up lots of nice soft dirt, and then it moved on to the next yard or something. If you want to read more about things like this, be sure to read Michelle Smallwright's book. I've got a book list for you that I'll give you at the end of the talk, and I'm sure that book is on it. Behaving as if the God in all life mattered. She is doing incredible work and has her own farm back in, I think it's Virginia, and has done a lot of work with the nature spirits. Okay, so dwarves and elves, I talked about that. Boy, I have to talk fast here. Let's see, I'll just skip trolls. They do exist. If you have a dog or another animal like a horse, which will not go over a bridge or won't walk over a grate, you probably have a troll that has adopted that space. They like underneath things. They hang from things. They kind of live there, and they hold a certain energy that's kind of dark and dense, so they feel kind of strange. but they're really not bad. And they basically come from Scandinavia. They are a particular type of elf or dwarf person that was named Troll from the Scandinavian countries. So that's kind of a little interesting note about them. One other thing I'll say about gnomes is that they are the ones that build crystals and minerals specifically. So if you ever want to find rock crystal or something like that, that's who to call on to help you. They know where it is and they safeguard it. And they, as well as the dwarves, regard rocks as living beings, and they really dislike it when people come in. A good example, I did not really know this for myself per se until this year. I have a lot of little stones in my garden area. So I was out there collecting and collecting, and I put them in a bucket and set them over on the side of the house somewhere and forgot about them. This year I went out to plant some more bulbs, and what did I find but all these stones, and I'd removed them all. Some of them I even recognized. I went to where the stones were supposed to be, and there's not one left there. They're all back in my yard. And there was quite a clamor when they began to see me pulling these stones out of the ground again. So I said, "Well, what is it?" And they said, "The stones lend an energy that is strengthening and supportive of everything else in the yard. We need the stones. When you plant, plant the stones with the plants." So my yard is full of stones again, but now I understand much better. There's so much that you can learn about this kind of work, and I do a lot of different things besides teaching. I do healing work and do private sessions for people and things, and I do hospice work, so I'm pretty busy. And I'm a slow learner in some regards, I think, but they have great patience with me once they know that you're trusted, trustworthy, I should say. I want to mention briefly that there are great beings that live in the mountains. If you think of just the state of California, we have Lassen way up north, we have Shasta, and we have some smaller things on down south. And above California, you have Mount Hood and Mount, can't think of the other one up in Oregon, but then above that, you have Rainier and then Whitney up in Alaska. All of these mountains are living beings, and if you are sensitive at all, you can feel their auric field as you move towards them on the highway. You can feel it for miles before you come. And the reason that you feel so uplifted when you go to the mountains, I think, is because of the great energy that resides through the body of that mountain and the great being that lives there. I've had mountains, especially Shasta. Shasta is such a feminine place, I feel. And every time I go to that particular place, there's a greeting that waves out or comes out to me like a great beam of light before I even get there. We were just up there last month again, and it's such a sacred place. I had just a wonderful experience. We'll talk about air spirits a little bit later, but when we saw the mountain, her face was covered, and it's so rare that we get to be up there for any length of time. So I said, "If it's at all possible, could you please, sky people, just move the clouds a little bit? I would so love to see her face." And lo and behold, the clouds began to move, and they sat off to one side for quite a while. And my husband very kindly stopped the car and let me just take this in. And soon thereafter, about the time he was ready to leave, the clouds kind of moved back over. So I no longer think this is coincidence. I've had too many experiences with things like this to know that it's for real. It is definitely real. There are great energies like the Continental Divide Angel or Deva that work with very active places in our United States. The Grand Canyon is a great repository for fire spirits. I'm not quite sure why, but it's very easy to get in touch with them there. I think it's a place where they go when there is not a lot of activity in active volcanoes, things like that. Let's see, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about tree spirits because they are truly wonderful and very easy to contact. Tree spirits love people. I'm not sure why, since so many of us hack them down without a thought, the clear cutting of the forests and things like that. But they seem to be able to know that there is this innate goodness in us, that if we would just let it come out all the time, we're going to be really wonderful beings. And they will support your work. They will assist you in any way that they can with the energies that they hold particularly. They are a bridge between earth and heaven. They have their roots solidly in the earth, and their arms up to the heavens. And the tree spirit itself lives within the body of the tree. It's one of the nature spirits that has a physical body, and it has the ability to leave that tree and come out. So if you have a particular tree in your yard that you know and love well, that tree spirit will come out. Usually in the evenings, they'll come and look to see where their humans are. And children in particular are very sensitive to this. Sometimes they'll say that tree is spooky, you know, if you have a tree outside the window or whatever. You just need to let children know that within that tree lives a marvelous being that will hold you in your arms, allow you to climb under it, dig under it, whatever. They love, love children. And the work that they do is quite remarkable. The great sequoias are a great repository for peace and compassion. The feeling of really what the stillness is, you can physically experience that in your body when you go to visit these living beings. I always feel like they are grandfather spirits or elder brothers, because some of them are so very old. So if you can, just go when there aren't a lot of people and soak that in. Oaks give great strength. There's a wealth of oaks in this area. I did not know the oak tree until we moved to this area, and I just fell in love with it. I have a great incident that occurred in my life. You might even remember this, Janice. Janice and I used to live on the same street in Atascadero. We had two oaks in front of our home, and when we bought the home, we did not know that the builder had piled a lot of dirt around the base of them, basically smothering each of the trees. When one of the trees began to weaken, we began to dig around, and we realized, good God, it's got 3 or 4 feet piled around the base. It's smothering. No wonder it's dying. So we took all this dirt away from both of them and hired a tree service to help, you know, with vitamins and all that. We had the little vitamin thingies around the tree, and I spoke to the tree. I did everything I could think of, and it hung on for 3 years. It valiantly leafed out for 3 years. Finally, in the third year, it got a huge crack in the upper part of its trunk, and my husband knew that it was going to fall. So he said, you know, we've got to take this tree out. We've got to go get a permit. And I was really sad, but I finally made peace with that, and I went and told the tree how much I loved it and that it was free to go if its work was finished. And I really appreciated the 3 years it had been there. Well, one day while I was in San Luis, I got a terrified phone call from my 8 or 9 year old daughter, who had walked home from school to find that oak tree lying on her house. She had to climb through the tree to get to the front door, unlock the door, and get in. And I usually got home a little bit after she did. So I stayed on the phone with her, telling her that she was safe where she was, and I'd get her dad on another line and he would race home. The guys at his office went ballistic when they heard this had happened, because our point was a carpool spot. And we had a huge driveway. A lot of the guys parked their cars and they, you know, carpooled to work. So they thought their cars were gone, probably. And we get home to find that we had had an east wind. That was the only time that ever occurred. We've never had east winds while we were living there. We always had west and kind of south or northwest winds. So the tree should have fallen directly on this huge driveway, and the house was kind of like this. Should have fallen that way. Instead, it fell into the arms of the other oak and then gently rolled onto the roof of my home. All the damage that we sustained was a broken capstone on our nice brick walkway that we had, a crushed gutter, and two...